I'm Peter Donnelly, I'm the curator of the King's Own Royal Regiment Museum.
If you could, shed a little bit of light about the King's Own Regiment, who they were, where they came from, who were these soldiers?
Right, well, the King's Own Regiment was raised in 1680, so the regiment has a fine and historic tradition. They moved to Lancaster in 1880, they came to Lancaster at the purpose-built Barrow Barracks. As a result of the Crimean War, the army was reorganised and territorialised, and so a bit of land was bought at the Barrow Estate in 1873, and the barracks were built in Lancaster, Barrow Barracks, which is now the University of Cumbria's campus in Lancaster. The regiment established good links with the local area, the Borough of Lancaster, during the Boer War. And when they came back from the Boer War, many men of the regiment were killed, and they commemorate the memorial at the regimental chapel, which is the Priory Church, which anybody's free to visit and see the memorial for the Boer War, and then the subsequent memorials to the First World War. This bond with the city, the bond with Lancaster, was growing. So when the war started in 1914, in August, the 1st Battalion was in Dover. They very quickly went across to France. And meanwhile, back in Lancaster, this very building we're in now, the museum, was the Old Town Hall, and that was pressed into service to process the volunteers who were coming forward to enlist. So on some medical documents, men are stated as being medically examined at the Old Town Hall, Lancaster. So probably in this very room, there was a queue of men who were stripping down to their briefs and getting the chest expansion measured and making the height measured. The doctor would be ticking them all off for process. So many thousands of men came through Lancaster to be processed, and then they were sent off down to the south of England to large training camps. That's where they did the training, and then between 14 and 15, many men of those early volunteers then went to serve overseas. Some went straight to the Western Front, some from the King's Own went to Gallipoli, and then some went to Salonika to take part in actions in 1915. So there was worldwide service from the King's Own, all with their origins in Lancaster.
How many people were enlisted to the King's Own Regiment?
Right, I think nobody has a precise number. I think probably about 50,000 to 60,000 men served in the King's Own. They weren't all just from Lancaster. If you look at this list here, which is a list of prisoners of war by December 1914. So these were the first early soldiers. And if you just run down the list, you've got men from Manchester, Kendal, Manchester, London, Manchester, Darwin, Manchester, Lancaster, Primrose, 47 Crown Street, Primrose. So these men were coming from all over the country to serve in the regiment. About 50,000 served altogether, just under 7,000 of whom died. So there was a greater chance to survive the war than to die, which I think people sometimes forget, that the overall casualty rate was about 11%. As tragic as it is, that meant 89% came back. Some of those 89%, though, were wounded and had the horrors of the war to cope with. So many men did come back, which we do have to remember, because I think sometimes we focus on those who are dead and in cemeteries because there's something tangible to see of their passing, whereas our cemeteries are actually full of soldiers who died, but they died as veterans 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years later. So we have to remember there's a lot more men serving than just those who are commemorated in war graves. So 50,000 men, plus the officers, a couple of thousand officers would have served in the regiment through the war. So we're talking a lot of people. Well, to put it in perspective, the industrial northeast, some of their regiments were four or five times as large as the King's Own. But you've got to remember that industrial northeast or Manchester area are far larger areas with many more people, you know, sort of millions of people were living there. So Lancaster did its fair share based on the smaller population that Lancaster and Morecambe had. And if you start to go around to the villages, Hornby, Galgate, Carnforth, Silverdale, they all provided men. And there was next to nobody living there, and so the able-bodied men of the right age, they were recruited by mobile recruiting parties, which somebody made a motor vehicle available to drive up to Hornby, and men were no doubt had their chest expansions measured somewhere in Hornby, and they too did their bit.
You've got the propaganda posters on display here at the museum. Did thousands come forward in their numbers for the King's Own Regiment when they saw those posters? Was there a kind of rose-tinted sense at the start of the war that I want to sign up and fight for my country, or was there a reluctance and then it was enlistment?
We know that through August 14, men enlisted. We know that an appeal was made for men to join the 5th Battalion. When the 5th Battalion went to Didcot, they went through and looked at the men who were too old for overseas service, too young for overseas service, or not medically able for overseas service. They needed 200 men. So the news came to Lancaster early September 14, asking for volunteers, and within about the 3rd and 4th of September, more than 220 men enlisted in those 2 days, and in the subsequent days, many more hundreds of men joined up. Now, it's not just anecdotal. We have the names of those men. We have the photographs of those men. We have the photographs of those men who were then doing their training at Didcot. And we know from the medal rolls that they went overseas on the 14th of February 1915. And I don't think those men responded to a picture. Those men didn't respond to a recruiting poster with some hats on. They didn't respond to a recruiting poster of John Bull because they hadn't been done at that stage. The recruiting posters came later. But these men responded because the local newspaper and the local people around knew there was the war on and men were being asked for, so they stepped forward. So what does that say about their patriotic duty? It wasn't just because they'd had a pointy finger from Lord Kitchener saying, it must be you, your country needs you. These men joined because their comrades were joining, their co-workers and their friends were joining. So if you want to look at the evidence, the hard fact evidence of the names, we have the names, we have the dates they enlisted, and we know when they went to France.
And I must point out to listeners that you're dressed as a World War One soldier. And
you recognise that, that's good.
And you've been in it all day, so
am
really...
Am I smelling a bit now?
No, but I appreciate that you've that some serious effort has gone into all the work that you've done. But you're dressed as this for the story of the first soldier, so if you could tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, we have this sad and tragic tale of Private James Hall of Fleetwood. He was of the Fleetwood Company of the 5th Battalion. The 5th Battalion was the territorial battalion which covered headquarters in Lancaster and drill stations up to Silverdale, Carnforth, Fleetwood, Blackpool, Garstang and that area. And on the war started on the 4th of August, and James Hall had been in Fleetwood in the drill hall, and he'd seen a notice on the wall about men being recruited and mobilised for the war. And next day, the mobilisation papers were delivered to him at home. And obviously a little bit disturbed about this, we have the coroner's report on the newspaper, and the sad story seemed to be happening that after breakfast, he went outside to the ship on the cow shed, and he had a rifle just like mine, and he decided to clean his rifle. So he would have pulled the bolt back, he would have had his rifle pulled through to clean the rifle, and at some stage in the process, he took the rifle and he lent it up with a bit of wood, because as you see, it's not that easy to fire the rifle yourself. He fired the rifle, a single shot was fired, and he committed suicide. The coroner was maybe very harsh. The coroner of Lancaster met 2 days afterwards, took evidence and said that it was a serious time for men to be, or men who were going the coroner, in summing up, said the case would have to be treated seriously. The deceased had evidently taken his own life at a time when he was perfectly sane. At such times when soldiers were called up to serve their king and country, it was the act of a coward to go and take his own life. The father's evidence proved that Hall was sane, and he pointed out that no alternative but to a verdict in accordance with the evidence of suicide could be given. Very harsh, but very early on in the war, this was before the first shot had been fired, that the poor man had committed suicide, and he was being judged by his peers, judged by the coroner at that time. And I would hope that if that happened today, people would be slightly more understanding of what that person... And it was claimed that as a keen religionist, he didn't want to fire against his fellow man.
So this is just one of countless stories that you've put together. You're the curator of this wonderful exhibition. So what are the other highlights? What were the stories that drew you in, and these were the ones that you chose to put on display?
Right, there's lots of different stories. There's the stories about the men coming forward to recruit. There's stories about individuals like Private Mawson, who was one of those Lancaster pals who came forward in September 14. He got killed in April 1915. His father was the local landscape architect, Thomas Mawson, and his father wrote the book, An Imperial Obligation, which you see in this case here, and that was written and published in 1917. And the idea of that was to provide homes for heroes. And after the war was finished, that's what happened in Lancaster with Westfield War Memorial Village. So all of these things that we have in the exhibition, there's Mawson on the wall, an autographed postcard of him survives the museum's collection. And from him, such a development, which is still providing accommodation for former soldiers today, came. It's very sad, but had he not enlisted and had he not been killed, maybe his father wouldn't have written the book, and maybe Westfield Village wouldn't be here today. It's funny how all these things can actually connect together like a jigsaw and still have repercussions 100 years on.
And that's the point, really. Everybody's marking the centenary. There's so much attention on this subject, and rightly so. Why should we remember this conflict? What makes this one different, in your mind?
Well, I don't think this one is different. I think this has been remembered in the same way that relatives had somebody who served in the Second World War, or relatives had somebody serving the Korean War, or relatives who just had somebody serving the army, are coming to the museum and have been coming to the museum. The regimental museum has been here since 1929, so it's not a new little idea that we've come along and said, oh, let's mark what happened in the First World War. The museum is about the story of the whole regiment, and the inquiries that I receive, which are many hundreds every month, are not just First World War, they're covering all aspects of regimental history and warfare. So whilst I think the media and a lot of people are now focusing on the centenary of the First World War, we have to bear in mind that it's not just the First World War that people are walking into the museum. They're bringing things from the Second World War, they're bringing things from the 19th century, because there are still families around who've got evidence of their relatives serving 200 years ago at the Battle of Waterloo, of which the bicentennial is going to be next year.